This is the Left Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Learn English Football Podcast with your hosts, Tim and...
Tom. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm an angry man, Tom. I'm an angry man. But we'll come to that. How are you, Tom? I suppose if you've been watching West Ham this weekend, you might be an angry man as well.
I'm certainly angry with one of the tackles that happened at the end of the game. It did get a red card, but on reflection, actually, a draw might be the fair result. We drew 2-2 with Sheffield United, but that's not what we're going to talk about tonight, is it, Tim?
No, it's certainly not. You do mean bottom of the league, Sheffield United, don't you?
I do, yes.
Okay, just checking. I didn't see the West Ham game, but I heard there was some last minute controversy, which it does make things interesting, but not when you're on the receiving end of it, Tom. And it's the controversy that brings us together today to talk about the Almeria loss away at the Bernabeu yesterday against the biggest club in world football, Real Madrid. It was a valiant performance, a brave performance from Almeria, but unfortunately, they came on the wrong end of a refereeing performance that I think is one of the worst I can remember, Tom. And Tom, you know, like me, we've seen a lot of football. We are long in the tooth in footballing terms. What does it mean, Tom, to be long in the tooth?
To be old and experienced.
Yes, we certainly are old and experienced. Experienced, Tom. Wise football minds, I'd say. Let's jump straight in, Tom. Let's just run over it again. It was a 3-2 loss for Almeria, so Real Madrid won at home. But it could have been very different. I think the referee really changed this game, and not so much the referee, the VAR. I don't actually want to blame the referee so much. I want to blame the VAR. Anyway, let's get to it. The game kicked off, and 30 seconds into the game, Arribas, the old Real Madrid player, signed this summer, a youth player, a good-looking player. We mentioned him last week as having a good game against Girona. He won the ball back on the right-hand side from Mendy, who was a bit sloppy in possession. To be sloppy, Tom, am I careful or am I not so careful?
You're not so careful. You're not clinical, perhaps, with your, in the case of Mendy, anticipating the ball. I also blame, I think the pass came from Nacho, and it wasn't under normal circumstances, the pass would be okay, but Arribas was so alert, he was so ready for the interception that Nacho's pass, I think, was also a bit sloppy.
A bit sloppy. A hospital pass, a pass that gets your teammate in trouble. Anyway, Arribas played the ball with his kind of interception, played it off to Milovanovic, who was starting his first game for Almeria. And he played it back immediately to Arribas, who played it into Robertone, the Almeria captain, as usual, who played a lovely through ball to Ramazani, who was bolting down the left-hand side, really running fast to bolt somewhere, was to run really fast. And Tom, that's my first question of the night, really. Do you think Ramazani got a bit lucky with the finish? Do you think he was shaping to put it across Kepa into the far side? I think that's what Kepa thought. And I don't think he got the cleanest of contacts. And it kind of went through Kepa. If Kepa had stayed where he was, I think it would have been a comfortable save. So do you think the finish was lucky from Ramazani, Tom?
You could say it was lucky, but when you are Ramazani in that position, your priority really is to get the shot on target. He was playing the ball first time from Robertone's pass. He was shooting with his left foot, I believe. Was it his left foot?
No, his right foot.
Oh, it was his right foot. Okay. But he just needed to get it on target. Sometimes they go in either side of the keeper. Sometimes they go through the keeper's legs. This one looked like it went in that direction. But when they go in, it's not lucky. If you miss, you could say that was unlucky.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I'm as an Arsenal fan, I think of Thierry Henry in those kinds of positions and curling it into the far corner and not giving the goalkeeper a chance. But anyway, it was 1-0 to Almeria, and going into the match, no one really had any hopes of getting any sort of result away at the Bernabeu. Let's just not forget that Almeria have never won at the Bernabeu in the history of the club. And The first half went, as you can imagine, a first half between Almeria and Real Madrid, who were losing, would go, with Madrid having the majority of the ball, but they didn't have a shot on target in the first half. So Almeria were going towards the break, looking very comfortable and very happy with their performance. And I'm sure Garitano, the Almeria manager, will have been very happy with what he saw. But just before the break, in the 42nd minute, Rudiger and Nacho once again didn't do a particularly good job of clearing a long ball, a sloppy bit of defensive work from the defensive duo for Real Madrid. And the ball drops to Edgar Gonzalez on the edge of the area. And he takes it on the half volley on the left foot and absolutely smashes it into the top corner, into the near top corner. Tom, do you think that was more sloppy defending from the Real Madrid defence there?
Yes, I think Nacho, interestingly, this is the same Nacho holding up the Super Cup that they had just won to the home fans from a week ago when they played in Riyadh. Perhaps his eye was off the ball a little bit mentally. You know, those two mistakes for the two Almeria goals, arguably both came from Nacho. So I think he could have been better at getting rid of the ball. I appreciate that he had to respond quickly, but what he did, he just knocked it down straight into the path of Edgar. No one would have expected it. Well, I say no one, actually. Tim, last week we were talking about Edgar's fantastic left foot volley that nearly scored a great goal for Almeria. So we can see the potential with Edgar, but no one would have expected that. I saw the view from behind his foot, and it was an arrow into the top corner. It fizzed into the net. It was probably, for me, the best goal of the game. So you could argue a little bit unlucky for Nacho, but at the same time, a little bit sloppy defending.
Yeah, I don't think Nacho expected the first bit of defending from Rudiger to be as bad as it was. And then, as you say, he didn't do a good job of clearing it. I think in those positions, the centre-back really has to do a job of just getting it out of a dangerous position. It doesn't have to go to a teammate, but it can't drop on the edge of your area. And as you say, it was an absolute wonder strike, totally unstoppable. And there we are, Tom. It's half-time. I was in my WhatsApp groups talking with my friends. I'm sure you were as well. And people had started to dream, but the weight of history was certainly on people's minds, and lots of people were saying that the most probable result was still a Real Madrid win, in spite of the fact that Almeria were winning 2-0. It was quite a funny situation, really, because, you know, when you're winning 2-0, you expect to really be able to push on for the win. Tom, were you confident at halftime that Almeria could see it out, or did you think it would be backs against the wall?
I should apologise to the Almeria fans, but at halftime I did put a bet on Real Madrid to come back. I saw that there were odds of 3.5-1 at that moment in time, and I thought, you'll never get odds like that on Real Madrid at home. So I thought, either way, if Almeria get a win or a draw, I'm a happy man, and if Real Madrid do what people still think they probably can or will do, then I win a bit of money. So at that moment in time, I wasn't that confident.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Tom, as a romantic, I allowed myself to start dreaming, especially because of the key fact that Real Madrid hadn't even had a shot on target. But then, Tom, the controversy started, and it came like It came like a scatter gun, like a Gatling gun of bad decisions. It was one after the other in a short period of time. In the 55th minute, there was a ball in from the left-hand side from Fran García. Kaiki jumps to clear the ball, but it looked, from my opinion, that Joselu was all over the back of him. He had his arms on his shoulders. He was using Kaiki to gain propulsion into the air. And I think he pushes Kaiki off balance slightly, and Kaiki adjusts by moving his arm out. And there's no doubt that the ball does make contact with Kaiki's arm. And if there was no surrounding situation, then I think it's a clear handball. But when you when you see the replay, it just seems so obvious that there is a foul on Kaiki from Joselu. And even more than that, you could say that Rudiger was also doing the same to Edgar. And I think Edgar probably would have got to the header before it had even arrived at Kaiki had he not had Rudiger all over the back of him. To be all over somebody, Tom, it's an expression in football. It basically means to be kind of covering them, to be dominating them, to be smothering them, to stopping them move.
And I'd say you can also use to be all over something outside of football to mean that you are very interested or invested in something. Are you going to get tickets for the game on Sunday, mate? Yes, don't worry. I'm all over it. It means it's on my mind. I'm going to do it.
In a very informal way, but also very common. So, yes, that's a good point. So, Tom, the referee is called over to the VAR to check if there's a handball because he doesn't give it in open play. He decides it is a handball. As far as I could tell, Tom, they didn't even seem to discuss the potential foul on Kaiki or on Edgar. So, Tom, did you think it was a handball, or did you think there were at least one foul in the lead up to the handball? And the lead up to something is the time just before it happens. So, for example, I spend a lot of money in the lead up to Christmas.
I tried to put myself in the referee's shoes here. If I were the referee going for VAR, first of all, I'm looking, was it hand contact? Yes, it was. It clearly hit Kaiki's arm. Secondly, I'm asking myself, was his arm in a natural position? No, it was extended. Third, I'm asking myself, why was it extended? Was it because Kaiki moved his arm into that position? Or was it, as you insinuated, that Joselu was climbing over the back, also all over the back of him. And at that moment in time, I want to see how much contact is the Real Madrid attacker putting on the Almeria defender. Is it a foul or isn't it a foul? And this is where I was very disappointed with VAR. I never saw a conclusive angle that showed me clearly the extent that Joselu was pushing into Kaiki. I needed to see from behind, but I was only continually showed shots that showed the front of Kaiki, and Joselu's arms and the extent he was pushing was covered. That view was blocked. And even tonight before this podcast, I looked at the highlights again, looking for a clear angle, and I could not get it. So I was disappointed with the VAR system because I think it prevented the referee from making a decision with all the information.
Yeah, well, this is exactly the point I was making just before. I don't think we can blame the referee entirely. In fact, I think he would actually be a bit of a victim of this as well, because it looks like he's had a terrible game. But in fact, I think on the pitch, he's made some correct decisions in the first place and then been let down by the people in the studio. And there are a lot of conspiracy theorists looking at this game, thinking, what's happened? Why has it happened? And you can understand why people have some dark thoughts about what's happened when essentially the VAR doesn't give the referee the opportunity, as you've said, to see the play in its entirety. And the referee can only judge what he's shown. And if he's only shown angles that focus on the handball, then of course he's going to judge the situation on that. So I think the main issue here is VAR, and maybe the question was wrong. I think that's something that's been highlighted before with VAR. If you ask VAR, was it a hand? If VAR says to you, was it a handball, or you ask VAR, was it a handball, then maybe the answer is yes. But if the question is there any reason why I shouldn't give this penalty? Then the answer could be very different. So I think the question being asked is crucial in VAR situations. Anyway, the referee does eventually give the penalty after reviewing it on the pitch side monitor. And Bellingham steps up, takes the penalty, slots it right down the middle, sends Maximiliano diving to his right, to Bellingham's left, and makes it 2-1 to Almeria. But, you know, it's 56 minutes in. It's away at the Bernabeu. The momentum has swung. The biggest club in the world against a team that hasn't won since May, using all the fortune that VAR can provide it. And then Really, Tom, I couldn't believe it. I actually couldn't believe it. I was still deeply frustrated, shouting at the television. I think there was steam coming off my mobile phone from the amount of text messages I was sending and receiving. But in the 60th minute, only 4 minutes after the first controversy, Lopy, the wonderful Almeria central midfielder, he won a loose ball back in midfield. He turned away from Jude Bellingham. His arm does come up, but I think it comes up in a natural way when you're turning. You need to keep your balance, and maybe it touches him in the face, maybe it doesn't touch him in the face, but it's certainly not enough to cause any pain or any, or certainly not enough to knock a big man who's probably, closer to 1 meter 90 than 1 meter 80 to the floor. And Bellingham hits the floor like a sack of spuds. A spud is a potato. To hit the floor like a sack of spuds means to hit the floor really hard and dramatically. The referee's only 2 meters away. He's looking at the action. He sees it in entirety. He doesn't even wave play on because at that point, I don't think anybody was thinking that it was a foul on Bellingham. Lopy sends a nice pass to Ramazani down the left-hand side. Ramazani uses his pace to run on to the edge of the area, plays a really nice outside of the boot, right-footed pass to Arribas, who's arriving at the back post, and Arribas finishes. First time back across Kepa, leaves Kepa no chance. And to be fair to Arribas, he doesn't celebrate. He's an old Real Madrid boy. You can see he doesn't want to upset his old fans and that. And suddenly, everyone's celebrating. It's 3-1. The momentum has shifted back in favor of Almeria. I don't think anybody watching that match yesterday in real time thought that there was a foul in the build-up. But the same old thing, VAR review pops up on the screen, and you're thinking, "Oh my God, what have they found?" And as it is, they go back and they interpret, they reinterpret the action between Lopy and Bellingham. Tom, do you think it's a foul? Do you think there's enough contact there for it to be a foul? Do you think it's just a coming together? A coming together is just when two people make contact, because that's just, if football is a contact sport. Do you think there was any intent? Do you think he had his arms raised? Or do you think you could also say that Bellingham had also lowered his head? What do you think of the situation?
My instinct is obviously to say it wasn't a foul, but actually, upon review of this one, I did think it was a foul. I don't think there was any intent. Lopy was clearly looking in the opposite direction. His arm was up. I was asking myself, what about Bellingham? Was he coming in a clumsy way? Was he coming too close to Lopy, inviting some kind of hand to the face through his own actions? But actually, no, Bellingham had stopped himself on both feet when the hand came up and caught him in the face. If it was amateur football, if it was Sunday League, then quite possibly play gets waved on. The trouble is, in the professional game, players have now learnt to go down every time, clutching their face, rolling around on the floor. And generally, these days, I think that is accepted as a foul. So the VAR team actually got the decision right. I just thought it was desperately unlucky that it happened. And even after the VAR decision, I don't know if you noticed, but when the referee came away from the TV screen and pointed to the spot, the Almeria players thought he was giving a goal. They didn't think he was giving a free kick, and they started celebrating. And then the faces and the heads dropped, and Garitano exploded, the Almeria manager. I think he might have got his yellow card then.
Yeah, well, I can understand where you're coming from, but there's a couple of things I'd like to mention on that. Firstly, I think that Bellingham, because of the angle that he's approaching Lopy, he is slightly at a diagonal because he's on the turn. So I think his head isn't at a natural head height. I think it's probably at a chest height. Lopy's facing the other way. He's not seeing where he's putting his arm. So if it had been an arm into the chest, I don't think there would have been any debate about it being a foul. So it's not Lopy's fault that Bellingham has lowered his head. Or it's not that he's lowered his head. His head is in a lower position due to the fact that that he's turning. But what really bothers me, Tom, and again, this is where the power of the VAR comes into it. I don't want to use the word corruption, but I'm going to, because I think it's dirty. Because the reason this was allowed to be reviewed, It was because it was a potential red card. And so if it had just been, is it a foul? That's not enough in the Spanish interpretation of the VAR interventions to call them over. And we'll talk about an extension of this conversation when we talk about the Vinicius goal. But do you think that in any way could be seen as a potential red card?
That has cast some new light on it for me, actually, Tim. If you're asking me, was it a foul or not? Then I could argue that, yes, it was an accidental foul, particularly because his arm was fully extended when he made contact with Bellingham's face. His elbow wasn't bent enough, perhaps. But was it a potential red card? Not in a million years. When the player's turning away, he's focused on the ball. You can't possibly justify that as a potential red card and be worth it and worth a look, a review for the referee. So now it sounds like the rules of the VAR system and when they are allowed to interfere and when they are allowed to communicate with the ref, those rules have been bent, shall we say, to put it mildly. The rules have been manipulated and not used as they should be.
Well, I obviously couldn't agree more. I think it was an absolute disgrace. And we'll move on and we'll talk about the next piece of controversy, because I think that also plays into the same situation. Because if you don't think that was a foul, or if you do think that was a foul, then I think that seriously correlates with the Vinicius goal. So let's talk about the Vinicius goal. So just to put it in context, that stopped Almeria going 3-1 up. So it's still 2-1 to Almeria away at the Bernabeu, and that's the 60th minute. In the 66th minute, Tchouaméni is on the right-hand side. He puts a diagonal cross into the area. Vinicius scores with what initially looks like his arm, but and then it's called over to the VAR, and the angles that the VAR person sees does make it look like it's his shoulder. However, I've seen further angles from DAZN, which make it look like it's his lower bicep. I think if you just look at his shirt, then I don't think that's a fair reflection, because I think he does wear an oversized shirt. You actually got to think about what's below the shirt, and I think it's at least the middle of his bicep, or at least some bicep in there. I don't think it's just a pure shoulder. But in the play, Vinicius is fouling Kaiki once again. And it's at least as much of a foul on Kaiki as the loppy foul on Bellingham. And the reason this wasn't reviewed is, of course, because the referee, the VAR, decided that it wasn't a potential red card. So we've got a situation where the VAR interpretation of the rules has meant that one foul that is a 50-50 is judged, is reviewed and seen to be a foul, but another foul, which is a 50-50, isn't even reviewed. And again, they're looking at it just as a handball. And in my opinion, they don't show all of the angles. So Tom, firstly, do you think it was a foul from Vinicius on Kaiki? And then secondly, what part of Vinicius's body do you think the ball came from? Let's just say it came off either his arm or his shoulder, and then looped into the far side of the goal and gave the goalkeeper no chance to make it 2-2 on the scoreboard.
First of all, regarding was it a foul on Kaiki, I would need to look closely at it again, actually. All the talk, all the attention was on was it a handball or not. So that occupied my attention completely. I wasn't able to make a judgment on whether Vinicius was unfairly putting his weight and pressure on Kaiki. Regarding the handball, when it happened, my first instinct was handball. Then I saw some replays that made it look like it came off his shoulder. Then I saw other replays that showed that it was coming off his bicep, the sleeve of his shirt, as opposed to the top of his shoulder. But again, my frustrations with the VAR system, because I saw the replays that the referee went and looked at. And again, he did not get the full range of views to be able to determine whether it was coming off his shoulder or off his arm. It seemed that the referee was only getting the views that showed it looking like it might have bounced off his shoulder.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I find crazy. And Tom, you know, me and you have prepared for this podcast, and I've found videos with better angles on TikTok and on YouTube than the VAR studio are providing to the referee on the pitch side monitor with potentially what should be access to every single angle in the stadium. Do you not think it's crazy? Do you not think that the VAR is essentially conditioning the referee's decision by providing access to images which essentially favor Real Madrid's the decision Real Madrid want, as opposed to the Real Madrid to the Almeria decisions? Do you not think this is essentially conditioning the referee?
I think it is. I think as soon, you know, we already know as soon as that referee is called over to the screen, most likely the referee is going to change his mind because the VAR are able to offer him a view, an opinion which the referee had not had previously. It shows you the potential power of VAR and how, you know, I could see why a conspiracy theorist would think that it's possible to rig VAR. You just need to get your right person in that studio controlling what views you decide to share with the referee at that moment. Of course, they're under pressure. The whole game, the whole stadium is waiting for a decision, and you have the power to choose to influence that decision. So a way around it, obviously, I think we need to have, I think they did it in the Super Cup last week. We'd like to hear this communication between the VAR team and the referee. That will eliminate a lot of these suspicions that there's conspiracies happening to help certain teams win. If you have open communication that everyone can hear.
Yeah, well, I mean, coming to that, I think the audios were released today. I've heard some of them, and again, they've provoked a lot of anger among the Almeria supporters because of exactly that, because of the images that they were being shown, and even I think there was one point in the match where it looked like Vinicius elbowed Pozzo in the face, and the referee actually asked the VAR if there was an elbow, should I come over and look at it? And the VAR guy said to him, no, it's all right, nothing happened. And you see the Vinicius elbow on Pozzo, and you think, well, that's much more of a contact than Lopy made on Bellingham, and the VAR decision for the Lopy situation was that it should be reviewed. Anyway, so there it is. It's 2-2. Real Madrid have got two disgraceful goals to get themselves back in the game. It's the 66th minute, and you think, well, it's going to be a Real Madrid win. There's probably no way around it. 76th minute, Bellingham had a lovely strike disallowed for offside. It was a clear offside in the build-ups. There wasn't too much controversy around that. Vinicius had a chance from the 6-yard box, which deflected wide. Bellingham had a wonderful bicycle kick, which went just wide. And then Mr. Florentino Perez, I mean, sorry, the VAR, the assistant referee, not Florentino Perez. He might have looked like him. He might have made the same decisions as him, but added 11 minutes of extra time, 99 minutes into the game. There's a cross from the right-hand side. Bellingham gets a header at the back post. It goes back across the goal, and Carvajal runs in at the far post to finish from close range to make it 3-2 to Real Madrid. And what anyone around the world who hasn't watched the game would just look at it and think, oh, it's another famous Real Madrid comeback. What a fantastic football club. But those who watched the match, and those unfortunately who know Spanish football and know the favors that both Real Madrid and Barcelona get, it leaves us with a bad taste in the mouth, Tom. I mean, I was looking at it yesterday. I was thinking, if I'm a supporter in China, if I'm a supporter in America, you know, the countries that pay a lot of money for TV rights, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, is this a league I really want to watch? Can the small club beat the big club, like in the Premier League or in any league? Because the beauty of football is it's a low scoring sport. And in low scoring sports, the potential for the underdog to beat the favourite is much higher than in a sport like basketball or tennis or rugby, when lots more points occur. We already know about the Negreira case. I'm sure a lot of our loyal listeners will have heard our special podcast on the Barcelona Negreira corruption case. And a lot of people were saying yesterday, the only difference, they think that Real Madrid have committed something similar. The only difference is that Real Madrid allegedly weren't stupid enough to try and put it through the books for the tax man, which is really where the Barcelona guy got caught out, because they tried to process the payments. It is hard, Tom, to watch a match like yesterday and not have those suspicions and have those dark thoughts. It actually killed a bit of my what the Spanish would say, ganas para ver el football, my desire to watch football, because as all of our listeners know, I am a romantic, and it kills the romance when the small club has to play against not just 11 men, but 11 men and the referee and the VAR. So Tom, do you think this can just be coincidental, or do you think sometimes too many coincidences altogether make something a bit less likely, and a bit more likely that something dirty?
I think that in defense of the referee, I don't hold him to blame at all. But in terms of, I think we might have seen how it is possible to manipulate what's going on around the referee. You know, essentially, with the introduction of VAR, we've taken responsibility away from the man in the middle, the referee, and we've given it to a team of people, from the assistant referee to the VAR studio. And that VAR studio, not only is there a senior technician there, but there's also video editors who control what images get shown to the referee. And you know, it raises questions. I'm sure I don't want to make accusations right now about any of these men or women who are in this studio, because I don't know them. But I am open to the possibility that when you are in these circumstances, it is possible to manipulate people and situations in your favor to get the results you've want. It's happened many, many times in football in many different circumstances. And I think that it needs to be eliminated with clear, open communication. It needs to be dealt with really in a way that will stop people like you and like me from thinking, why am I going to switch on this match when Real Madrid are playing at home? Because not only have you got 90,000 fans in there who want one team to win, but you've also got the officials who are supposed to be impartial, who appear to be giving every decision in favor of Real Madrid. Yes, I feel similarly frustrated, and I am suspicious that we have a new way to influence the result of a football match. I think we can deal with it, but right now, I think we need to take a close look at it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is it out and out corruption and payments, like in the Negreira case was alleged to have happened? But the other thing is the influence of the media. Real Madrid have their own television channel. Real Madrid dominate Marca, El Marca, the biggest sports newspaper here. And apparently they spent all week talking about how the people named for the match to officiate the match were anti-Madridista, which means anti-Madrid. And through doing that, create a pressure on the referees. I'm translating in real time here, so forgive me if it's not the most fluid, but Alfredo Relaño, TV football pundit and commentator, said today is a day for the black legend of Madrid, the dark legend of Madrid, one that will last for 30 years. They've attacked the referee Hernandez so much that this is the result. Real Madrid don't need the, don't didn't lose 3 points, but they did lose prestige. Another TV commentator pundit came out and said, "I've been broadcasting football in the Premier and the top division of Spanish football for 36 years, and in the last few years with VAR, I can't remember a scandal with of such great gravity that like what's happened today. Poor Almeria, and you know." And there's lots more I could read. It is a sad situation, and it's just sad that, you know, a club like Almeria, a small club, haven't won a game since May, and they go up against a club like Real Madrid, and it seems like Real Madrid need a little favour to get them over the line.
I would like to offer a little bit of optimism for our Almeria listeners. We've now seen this team get better and better. We saw they deserve to win against Girona, top of the league Girona. We saw they deserve to win against Real Madrid. We've seen that the coach has got an excellent formation that's working very well. He's picking the best players. He's using his subs very well. I totally agree that he gave his debut to the young striker, Milanovic, and used Suarez as a pap impact sub late on in the game. You want a young striker to be running around chasing the ball in that game for you. I feel we've got the right coach. The team has got even more determination now. They'll have the chip on the shoulder, the anger of what's happened in Real Madrid, but they will also have that self-belief to know that they're capable of getting results against the next clubs. So I think Almeria could get on a bit of a run here. Will they stay up though, Tim?
I think it's still very highly, highly, highly unlikely. I think we're looking at a 1% chance. But as you say, we've had a couple of great weeks, and we've got 1 point from the last 2 weeks, but it could so easily be 6 points. And if it had been 6 points, then we'd be in touching distance of safety. And that is how quickly football can turn around. So, you know, if they have a good February, Tom, if they get 2 or 3 wins in February, then anything's possible. There's still a lot of football to be played, but the other factor in this is the teams who are safe, who are in the safety positions. I think one of them is Celta Vigo, who have got Rafa Benitez as the manager, and he's a wily old fox. A wily old fox means someone with lots of experience and intelligence. And the other team is Seville, or Sevilla. And you'd think that Seville would have the experience and the quality to put a run of games together. So really, I'm not looking at those two teams. I'm looking at the sides above them. And they are a fair distance away, Tom. We're looking at kind of Villarreal in 15th place, where you can't see it. You would think Villarreal would put some matches together. And then Mallorca are 14 points ahead of us. Tom, that's all we've got time for on the podcast today. All of our listeners, thank you very much. Get involved in the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Tell a friend, ask them, do you speak football? If they say yes, send them our way. And if they say no, do the same. Tom, it's been a pleasure. See you next time.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, everybody. Good night.